This is The End User, episode 178 for Tuesday, July 22nd. Pants-based personal flying transportation system. Hello and welcome to The End User, the show where we get together and talk about our experience with consumer technology with a bit of news from your perspective. The End User.
It's the tech news that you can use.
I am your host and producer, Chris Barnes.
And I'm Futurist Prime, Taylor Marr. And
Taylor, I thought we were going to have a slow week this week, but turns out we have a pretty meaty show, I think.
Yeah, I guess Microsoft had some different ideas about it.
Yes, they did. So some pretty crazy news coming out of Microsoft. I didn't really see it coming. You know, I thought that they were going to have some redundancies from the Nokia acquisition, but the reports are coming out that they are going to cut 18,000 jobs and 12,000, around 12,500, according to GigaOm, are from Nokia alone. So that is an order of magnitude more than I thought we would see coming out of that acquisition.
Yeah,
so
it's quite a bit. They haven't pinpointed any specific cuts yet. They're going to roll them out over the next 6 months or so. But this follows up on Satya Nadella's memo to employees a little over a week ago that was published on their website, iterating a new era for Microsoft, you know, one that would have a very bright future, lots more working together, a lot more collaboration, and focusing down and pairing on what makes Microsoft successful. And I guess the natural evolution of that, you know, when you want to shake things up at a company, you have to get rid of redundancies.
Yeah, and it's not to me, it's not just really redundancies. I mean, you look at how they came about to purchase Nokia, and there are certainly a lot of redundancies there. But it just seems like he's trying to make this move to a new Microsoft future, and that future happens to be a smaller company, and whatever benefits come from that, you know, hopefully they will reap. But in the meantime, it's a pretty big shape up in the technology industry in general. This is the largest layoff in Microsoft history. So
yeah,
I think
it will be once it's over. So Nadella wrote another memo,
yes,
itemizing some of the departments that would be cut, and I noticed in this one he made repeated use of the terms lean and agile.
Yes.
More of a startup mentality than a 30-year tech juggernaut.
Yeah, well, we'll see what they actually do with that. But yeah, that's kind of the idea, is to start moving a little bit more quickly and embrace some of these methodologies that allow you to move quickly and to release things quickly. And, you know, it reminds me of the way the browsers ship. You know, the browsers these days, there's just one browser for the most part. It's the most up-to-date browser, and they're just shipping releases all the time. And, you know, I don't know how they're going to get there, but it seems like that's where they want to go. And, you know, not that they're going to be a startup, but the products that they release kind of embrace that quick-moving business world. So, you know, again, this is a letter from the CEO of Microsoft, and as such, you can expect that it's kind of dripping with gobbledygook corporate speak. But, it kind of had to be, I think. If you're announcing that many layoffs, then there was really no easy way to put it. And it would incite a lot of anger if it were more blunt, you know what I mean?
Yeah, I do. So not to belittle the jobs that will be lost, but let's talk about the products that the users are going to lose as a result of these changes.
Yeah, I'd have
what's coming.
I'd have to imagine most of those 18,000 people are very smart people if they're working at Nokia and Microsoft, and they will land on their feet most assuredly, or at least I hope. So if you know anyone that's affected, then wish them luck. So, yes, let's move into some of the product side and what's actually going to affect the end users. You know, it's important that we mention the state of the company, as it were, in these huge layoffs. But what we really care about here is the end user. So let's talk about some of the technology changes that are going to be coming. So one of the things that they're going to do, and they're saying that they're going to do this in the coming months is going, they're going to shutter the Xbox Entertainment Studios division of Microsoft. So this is the division of Microsoft that built games for Microsoft throughout the past and now on PC and all kinds of platforms, but now, of course, on the Xbox. So that's a division that's about 200 employees, and they're going to be shuttering that division. And they must have looked at this and said, well, okay, this is not going to be a profit center for us, so we're going to have to close it.
Another thing that they're cutting, which I consider to be iconic in today's culture, is it's the end of the line for Nokia's feature phones.
Yeah, so they're hoping to move all of the Nokia feature phones with the Asha phones over to real Windows Phone. And they are... So they're going to do the same thing for the Nokia X line. And they're going to move that over to Windows Phone as well. So, you know, I think we knew when those phones came out that it wasn't in line with what Microsoft was thinking. And it was a continued Nokia project. So I thought that they were going to not continue doing that and that they were going to move those devices over to Windows Phone. But they did actually release these phones and they did actually run Android. And I guess they're just not going to do that anymore.
Yeah, it's the Asha phones that I'm a little more nostalgic about.
Yeah.
I never owned one in particular, but that was the evolution of the original Nokia cell phone.
Yes, yes. That was the direct lineage from the original. So... that's a shame to see. It's a shame to see Nokia, you know, kind of get absorbed into Microsoft and, you know, see all these layoffs coming. It's not how I would have envisioned Nokia's future if you had asked me 5 to 10 years ago.
Yeah, that I would be surprised as well. But one piece of Nokia will have an independent life, and that is Mix Radio.
So they're going to... try to spin off the branch of Nokia that made Mix Radio, and they're going to try and they say they're seeking investors for you know, that intellectual property. And you know, of course, they say they're in talks with people, and we don't really know what the deal is, but they're definitely trying to get rid of it, is what we do know. So another little bit of divestment of things that aren't part of their core mission. So all in all, you know, all the things we just talked about in kind of rapid succession, I think we can say one thing about Microsoft at this point in time, and that is that they are attempting to move in some direction. And, you know, I am not sure what that direction is. I'm not sure it's positive, although I'm not sure it's negative either. But they're trying to shake things up. And, you know, I'm not sure what to take away from that other than... they're moving somewhere, and I just don't know where it's going. So, you know, I kind of see the vision, kind of trying to, you know, Google does this too. They do the spring cleaning every once in a while, and they sell off a bunch of stuff. And, you know, I think this is what Microsoft is doing to try and get down to the things that make them profit and the things that will make them profit in the future. And we know that cloud services are involved in that, obviously. The future of devices is a little hazy at this point in time. And, you know, looking past the products that we have now, it's just hard to say what they're kind of aiming for in the future. But I think they at least know that they're trying to move somewhere and that where they are currently is not where they want to be. So, you know, it's hard to say where exactly that's going to go. But we'll find out in another... we won't find out the consequences to what's happening now for maybe another 5 years or so, maybe even a little longer.
Right. But the tone that we got talking about these exact changes last week was a positive one. It was interesting, and it seems like management seems to know what they're doing. Now, this is the other foot of that. They're cutting the things that they know don't work in order to try to find a direction. But there's no less reason to think that they will emerge a better company out of this.
Yeah, it depends on what they do next. So, you know, I'd really like to see them embrace this cross-platform idea and kind of embrace their inner software maker. You know, I think that that is where they can be successful. And so hopefully we'll see them do that over time. And that at least seems to be part of the message. So, Taylor, on to the next 5 years. We'll see what happens.
Well, speaking of cloud services that will be profitable in the future, Amazon has a new profitable line of entertainment for the Kindle series. They are introducing Kindle Unlimited, $10 a month for all you can read books and all you can listen audiobooks from a small selection of their catalog.
Yeah, that's what's kind of upsetting, is that it's just a subsection of their catalog, because I assume they don't have the rights to offer up their whole catalog for a new deal like this. But apparently the selection leaves something to be desired.
So they have about 600,000 books available right now. This was actually leaked 3 or 4 days ago, and
yes,
then Amazon has rushed it into service, and so it is now available in the United States.
Yeah, I think they pushed it out by accident, on a whim, because the information got leaked, and they said, okay, well, we better put it out there now.
And so now you can sign up for a free 30-day trial, and the audiobook section is an Audible subscription with access to 2,000 audiobooks via any Kindle device.
So I don't know about you, but I don't spend nearly that much, $10 a month on books, I don't think, on my Kindle. I know there are a lot of people who are who read a ton, but I am not really one of those people, so this wouldn't make sense for me. But I'm sure there's a lot of people out there that spend more than that, and this might make sense for it, given that they will increase their selection over time.
Yeah, I bet this is going to make sense for a certain type of reader, probably people who generally read a lot of new releases.
Yes,
so
exactly,
I would
right.
imagine that Amazon is going to get the unlimited rights to a lot of new releases. Especially think about someone who reads a lot of nonfiction. They're always going to want the newest things. Maybe they'll go back and read some Harry Potter or Lord of the Rings every once in a while. Both of those titles are available. But mostly they're looking for new stuff, and they can expect those to be there. And having access to it for a set price is going to be valuable to them.
Yeah, definitely. I used to work at a bookstore at Borders, who is now out of business, of course. But we definitely had a regular core amount of customers that would come in for all of the latest releases. We definitely had those people. So I know they're out there, and I know that they would probably like this, assuming that Amazon gets their new release count up with this plan. So we'll have to see what they do with it in the coming months. I'd imagine, they rushed it out because of the leak or something, I think. I'm not sure of that. And I'd have to imagine that, B, it was their plan to kind of move slowly into this anyway. So they happen to not have a ton of new books for the moment. But I'm sure that'll change.
Yeah, it could be that in the next few months, we'll see a large addition to their catalog.
Yeah, and so if we see a large addition to their catalog, we know that was their intended release date.
Yeah.
So I don't know.
But
we'll
it might not happen that way.
No,
and
it might not.
Either way, I think this is going to be the best value for someone who reads a lot of new releases on their Kindle.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely so. Again, once they get there, not for the moment, but once they get there. All right, well, I think that'll do it for the top news. We've got some encouraging Amazon news and some depressing Microsoft news. So how about you say we lighten it up and go into the afterburners?
Sure, I'm ready. Just let me get my seatbelt on.
Okay, and don't forget your gin fizz.
It's waiting for me at the end.
Okay, very good.
So last week we reported that Aereo had a new business plan. They said they were going to operate as a cable company. The court defined them as a de facto cable company. And they said, well, that's really simple. So we will pay the cable broadcast fees and we will restart our services and become a cable company. And unfortunately, later that week, the U.S. Copyright Office said Aereo is not eligible to pay those fees under the terms of the Copyright Act. So that whole business plan is essentially a non-starter.
Yeah, so they'll basically have to negotiate individual contracts with the content providers and the broadcasters, and they're not
guaranteed. I doubt that they will want to negotiate those contracts.
Yeah, that seems like a hefty fee to pay. So they don't get those kind of contracts by default in this case because of this ruling. So they've got some thinking to do. We'll see what happens with them. So
it's a real shame because before all of these rulings came out, Aereo had over 75,000 subscribers at $10 a month.
Yeah, that is a hefty amount of subscribers for a service like this. So
new and unproven and offered sort of a limited scope of functions.
Yeah, so we'll see what they pivot to next. You know, they're kind of flying by the seat of their pants here, and we'll have to wait and see.
Aereo, it's a pants-based personal flying transportation system. Are you interested, very interested, or very interested?
Yeah, they'll have Which to do one? Some A-B testing or something. I don't know.
Which one?
All right, well, for exactly one listener of this podcast, this story will be relevant. BlackBerry Messenger, BBM, is now in a beta test right now for Windows Phone. So if you are a Windows Phone BlackBerry enthusiast, then this is going to be a hell of an app for you. So this is kind of interesting to see BlackBerry move out into the world, and a BBM client for Windows Phone is kind of a cool thing. Again, noted in the past, the biggest thing that BlackBerry had going for it, I think, was their BBM platform. So it's kind of cool to see that move on and become part of a bigger world, including Android, iOS, and Windows Phone at this point in time. So if you were a BBM enthusiast and you happen to be a Windows Phone user now, then you're in luck.
Windows Phone BlackBerry enthusiast. We are going to get a lot of angry emails from Windows Phone users who like foraging for fruit.
Right.
So Netflix has a new viewing mode. If you are able to watch Netflix through your ISP without it getting bogged down, you can now watch in a private mode that allows you to watch movies without it affecting your preferences and suggestions. So that's pretty cool. It's a simple thing. You just turn on private viewing mode and you can watch all those documentaries that you felt guilty about.
Right, the documentaries.
Well, I don't know what they have. I don't know what people feel guilty about watching on Netflix.
So LG is announcing a new phone here. It's called the G3 Beat, and it's basically a mid-range version of the previously mentioned G3 phone. That's the phone that had the quad HD screen that we were talking about. And this is basically just a stripped-down version of that. You've more or less got half the specs, and presumably it will be a little bit cheaper. And the screen is a little bit smaller. So I guess it's good to see a cheaper option for their flagship phone come out into the wild.
Probably not one we'd recommend, though.
No. Always get the flagship. So after a some kind of court ruling in the European Union, Google has stopped calling games with in-app purchases free in their marketplace. So they're no longer going to use that language when describing those kind of games. So you know the kind of game where you basically you have to buy stuff to play it, although if you're extremely persistent at the game, then you can kind of get by. That's the kind of game that the EU was worried about. So, you know, I'm not sure I want the European Union designing the interface of the Android store, but at the same time, I feel like in this one particular case, this is probably a good thing, and it is actually the right thing for consumers.
Well, that's good. Another good thing for consumers of Verizon Fios is that they are getting slight speed bumps, mostly in the upstream direction. So Verizon's old tier started at 15 megabits per second downloads with 5 megabits upload. And so then they had 50, 25, 70, 35, 150, 65, 30, 60, 365, and 500 to 100. But now all their speeds are the same down and up, starting at 25 instead of 15. So the main news here is that their budget fiber subscription option is now 25 megabits per second both ways instead of 15 megabits per second and 5 megabits upload. So it's a better value for their starting levels, and you can, of course, go all the way up to 500 megabits per second download and upload.
So Google has announced the release of a Google Analytics app for the iPhone. So I thought I would mention this. This is a little outside of the usual, the end user wheelhouse. But, you know, a lot of people have personal websites these days that has Google Analytics on it. I thought it was kind of cool that there is now a perfectly good iPhone app for that. So I figured I'd at least mention it. And with that, let's turn off the afterburners. We can get into the end user stories. And Taylor, you can now start to enjoy your gin fizz.
Oh, good. I was waiting. It was starting.
Yeah, you don't want to get there before the afterburners. That would be dangerous.
Yes, very much so.
So right off the top, we're going to get into net neutrality as we have been doing in the past couple weeks. We seem to get this every single week. And I wanted to share an article from The Consumerist that is going to be in the show notes. And, you know, I'm not going to read it verbatim or anything, but basically they go around the industry and in a single sentence sum up the position of most of the major players in the industry. So I feel like that's a pretty good resource for people who want to know these things.
So the most important new piece of information from this consumer article, which is great all the way through. It's worth reading if you're interested this battle, even if you've been listening to everything that we've been saying and many other great news outlets have been saying. The most important piece is that the open comment period that was available on their website has reached well over 1 million individual public comments. And the most important one to come in recently was a 28-page filing from Netflix laying out the case for what's happening with Netflix, how it relates to net neutrality and fast lanes, and what they think should be done about it. And I think a vast majority of the 1 million other comments that are on the FCC website would probably agree in principle on Netflix's proposed solution, which is essentially to reclassify the major internet service providers as Title II services, allowing the agency to treat them more like public utilities rather than how they currently exist.
Right. So, that's clearly what Netflix wants. And there's a bunch of each company kind of has a different take on it. And I think Some people want them to create something new. They want to go to Congress and say, okay, well, Title II is designed for telephone companies, and this is not that. So while we agree that these internet lines are pretty much what the common carrier embodies, the actual verbiage of Title II does not really apply. And they want to go to Congress for that. So I'm not sure that's ever going to happen. But and then there are others like Netflix in this case we're talking about who actually want the Title II to apply to the ISPs. So and then there's kind of a third one out there that is just don't regulate at all. I feel like it's the other kind of attitude that I've seen. So it'll be interesting to see what combination of these things will get. I'd imagine that the way the FCC is going about it now is a little bit gloves off, but with kind of a warning.
Sure, that sounds about right to me. But what's interesting here is that Netflix is really strongly positioning themselves in the middle of this debate.
Yeah, they've been very aggressive about it, and so has their backbone provider, Level 3.
Yeah, and so now we're seeing a lot of public dialogue between Verizon, Level 3, and Netflix.
Yeah, and, we talked about last week, the blog post that Verizon had put out, and Level 3 put out a response basically saying, well, the congestion problem at Verizon's interconnect is trivially solved by spending a small amount of money. In fact, so small, Level 3 says, we'll pay for it. In fact, we'll come to your data center and install it. And that Verizon is refusing to make these kind of upgrades to make their consumers' Netflix experience better. And they're requesting, at the same time, they're requesting money from Netflix to make their consumers' experience better. So, you know, it's a complicated issue. I know I've said this before, but it is really a complicated issue. And you look at that list from the consumers post, and a lot of consumer advocacy groups are on different sides. So I think it's an extremely technical issue, and it's hard to come down on one side or the other. And everybody seems to have differing opinions about it. But again, what we can at least say is that we have underserved consumers. We've got the kind of blow-by-blow in Verizon and Level 3, and it's been kind of interesting to see just how aggressive that public battle has been. Usually these are the kind of negotiations and talkings that happen behind closed doors, and that just has not been the case at all in this case. It has been absolutely out in public, and it's been a little bit vicious. So I'm hoping for the best with this issue, but I'm not encouraged to see it, actually.
So, speaking of the underserved consumer, we've got a story that one consumer, a Verizon Fios customer, has posted on his blog and on YouTube about his experience. He paid for the 75 megabits per second tier for Verizon Fios and was getting 0.5% of that speed when trying to stream Comcast content.
Ouch.
Or streaming Netflix content. So he decided to do a test. He would do a hypothesis where he would connect to a virtual private network. And now this would send his data to a third party and then to Netflix, however they connect from that internet service provider, which was not Verizon. But it still has to eventually go from that private network server through Verizon to him. And what he found, and this doesn't prove any particular point of congestion or throttling, but his Netflix streaming service went up by 8 times faster through the VPN, although in a perfect scenario, it would be significantly slower. So he wrote in his blog post, Verizon has made an enemy of him.
Yeah, and that is not the kind of blog post you want to see from the end user, right? That's pretty bad.
And even the new speeds that he was getting through his 75 megabits per second internet providing was only about 3 megabits per second. And that's Netflix's standard throughput for standard definition video.
Right.
Not high definition, and certainly not the ultra high definition that they offer on some content these days.
Yeah, and the one thing I can say about this is that so that's a pretty dramatic decrease. But what's happening when you VPN like that is you're essentially moving away from the interconnect node by sending your traffic somewhere else. So you're not hitting the interconnect, which is congested. So by sending your traffic kind of elsewhere, you're effectively routing around the congestion. And so it's not necessarily indicative of foul play on, or I guess not really foul play because we don't have the laws to call it foul play, but it's not really indicative of Verizon throttling Netflix video. Although, even with that said, that's a pretty dramatic number, and you would think that if the congestion weren't there in the first place, that those numbers should be a little closer to each other. So it doesn't necessarily mean that Verizon is up to something nefarious and throttling Netflix traffic, but what it does mean is that there's congestion and they're not doing anything about it, so that When they route the traffic around to a different place using VPN, the speeds increase. So it could be because they're throttling it and VPN encrypts the traffic, or it could be that it's just routing around a particular interconnect that is congested. So that can be, it could go either way, and it's kind of tough to say. But given all of the other evidence that we have around and all of the conversations we've been seeing between the ISPs, the FCC, and the content companies, it's not looking good for Verizon and Comcast PR people these days.
It is not, and we are going to get to the Comcast PR people soon enough.
Yeah, I guess we are, aren't we? All right, well, let's get out of this net neutrality debate and get into your green tech story of the week. What do you have for us?
Oh, this is a very exciting one, but not for a little while. So we've spent plenty of green tech stories talking about Elon Musk and the Tesla Motor Company. And their cars are all electric and very exciting. The Model S currently retails for beginning at $70,000. We are expecting their Model X crossover SUV to come sometime in the next year or two. It's also going to be a competitively priced luxury car, which means that it'll be expensive. But what they have just announced is their next car after that, the Model 3, which will arrive hopefully sometime in 2017 at a entry-level price of $35,000 with a 200-mile range.
Yeah, 35 is down into regular consumer territory. That's pretty cool.
Yeah, I mean, that's about as cheap as you can get an electric car today. And those
that's
do
about
not
right.
have the quality and range that Tesla is promising on this car.
Yeah, so that seems pretty promising. You know, I think we're on the verge of electric cars really being a mainstream option for, you know, just about everybody's car. And this is one step along the way, so it's good to see.
And that's exactly what they want. I mean, that's why they have released the specifications and diagrams of their battery technology.
Right, yeah, because for them, the more people that buy electric cars, not only their electric car, just people who buy them in general, grows the market share of electric cars in general, and they probably get a little bit of kickback from that.
The more the market share grows, the better the infrastructure will be.
Yes, yeah, so it
we
it
all
really
know
helps
that
them.
The battery and the range of these cars is what limits them. The more places you have to charge up an electric car, the better it competes with the gasoline distribution network.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, well, let's get out of green tech and get into the tip of the week. And you've got us covered with a curious one. Tell me why everything I know about passwords is wrong, Taylor.
It is pretty curious. Okay, so a team of mathematical researchers decided to attack the problem of password security. And they did it in an interesting way. So I first want to point out that their idea of password security starts with the assumption that a password is only truly secure if it only exists in your head. So this does not apply to using a password management service, which that password is only as secure as the security of the password management service. Right, Chris?
Well, yes. So basically, you're boiling down all of your passwords into one. But the individual passwords are able to be extremely long and secure. So the idea is that you'll just remember one password. But if the service were compromised, your passwords shouldn't be leaked because of their security precautions.
Right. But their security precautions could also be overcome. And so presumably an easier way than you of sound mind with a password that's only in your head.
Right. It's kind of philosophically that may be true, but I think practically it's not true. But again, this is kind of a philosophical article, and that's what we're talking about. So
no, but you're exactly right. So these researchers looked at the mathematical capability of humans to hold passphrases in their head and determine how much data you could store, how many passwords and how strong. And they found that there's a direct competition between how strong your password is and how many you can hold. And so it is physiologically, mentally impossible to fully keep a secure set of passwords in your head according to the rules of password advice that we've accepted as a society. So assuming you're going to keep all your passwords in your head, you have to figure out how to pick and choose which ones are going to be more important. And so they say that you can develop a system that ranks all the passwords you need to keep by how easy they are to break or how easy the encryption system you're using it with is broken and how important is the data you're storing on it, how valuable it is. So you have high-value passwords that need to be complex and differentiated and low-value passwords where you just want to make sure that if that password is broken, no valuable data can be stolen from you. So for those passwords, they argue that a weak password is just as good, is better actually, than a complicated password for accounts where you need a password but you don't have sensitive data stored on that account, because it leaves more room, more space in your brain for remembering complicated passwords for more important accounts.
Right, for the and more finally, valuable you should, data.
Yeah, you should develop a system that can spit out different password combinations algorithmically so that you can most easily remember your important passwords using a system that differentiates them cryptographically.
And again,
did you get all that, Chris?
Right. This is assuming that you're just not going to use a password manager, right?
This is assuming that, yes.
So
this is assuming that the only way you trust your passwords to be safe is if they are stored only in your head or potentially on pieces of paper that are locked away somewhere.
Right. So, for example, I wouldn't imagine that the codes to launch nuclear missiles are in LastPass, right? Just
right,
for
exactly.
example. So, of course, there was a story a while back about those codes, and they were not very good codes. It was something like 0000 or something like that. So, anyway, yeah, very interesting. I could see a situation where for most of your online stuff, you have a set of passwords in LastPass or some password manager, and then for like one particular high value site, maybe you would memorize some crazy password once, and that would be your password. So I could kind of see some combination of these things. My memory is horrible, and I need a password manager. So that's just a prerequisite for me. But interesting stuff nonetheless.
Right. And so the counterpoint to that is you don't need a strong, unique password that you memorize or put in LastPass just to lock down your free New York Times account.
Right. And then, I guess what I mean is I'm already using it, so I would just be more comfortable throwing it in there in the first place.
Sure. Well, that's the tip of the week. It's very complicated, but
yes,
if you are someone who does not want to use a password management service like LastPass or 1Password or Apple's new iCloud keychain or any of many other great options out there, if that's not an option for you or you don't feel comfortable with it, there is new math determining how best to set your password preferences and determine mentally what those passwords are going to be. And if you're still confused by it, you can write us an email and I'll try to explain it. Or you can read the article in our show notes.
All right, well, let's move right along from that and let's get into our app pick of the week. And oddly enough, I have us covered with an iOS pick. This is a
Chris, did you get an iPhone?
No, I just thought that this looked cool. I would like to use it, of course, but not being an iOS person, I guess I can't. But it looked neat. It's been getting a lot of buzz. It's Marco Armet's application, and it's called Overcast. It's a podcasting application. So certainly if you're listening to us, you probably want to check that out and see if that's a better solution to download your podcasts with. But so, you know, I can't say much more than that because I haven't really used it. I've only been able to see what it's doing. And, you know, it's hard to get an impression about an app that way. So, and you haven't installed it either, right?
No, I just found out about it today, so I haven't had a chance to try it yet.
So you'll have to try and install this and see if it makes sense for you. But I thought I'd throw it out there anyway. So the app pick of the week is Overcast for iOS, and it seems like a pretty, at least from what I can see, it seems like a pretty decent solution. So maybe in the next couple weeks, you can get a chance to install this and give it a try. Or if the listener would like to leave us some feedback after they've installed Overcast and they like it or don't like it or whatever they think about it, you can send us an email, of course. We've got the end user at thedigitalmediazone.com. So let us know what you think.
So it's free to download, and there's a $5 in-app purchase, which unlocks a lot of cool playback effects, it seems like, including a fully scalable speed scale and an option to select smart speed, which plays back podcasts at 1.26 speed and automatically shortens silences.
Cool, yeah. That's the podcaster should be editing out the silences, but that's a story for another day. All right, well, let's get into our very last story of the week, and I am absolutely sure you have probably already heard of this one, but it's the service call from hell, and this is Ryan Block, who was one of the founders of Engadget, and he
is now a vice president of AOL.
Yes, he recorded a subsection of his phone call with Comcast, and the outcome is just staggering. What the service rep was trying to get him to do, to, you know, he's trying to get him to reinstate his service or not leave, and he just went completely over the top. And apparently there's been this whole follow-up with this, and the incentives for the employees are apparently all kinds of crazy, and
that was all I could think listening to this recording, was that there must have been one very strong economic incentive for this Comcast employee to keep anyone on the phone in this manner.
Yeah, even if there's basically no chance, they figure they might be able to get lucky and, you know, have something happen. I don't know, but it's really pretty insane. And again, it's been making the rounds on like the nightly news and that kind of thing. So you've probably at least heard a subsection of this call already, but it's pretty ridiculous. And I think it's, unfortunately, I think it's indicative of a lot of the companies that all of us deal with on a daily basis. So, you know, not even to waggle the finger at Comcast, but I think a lot of the corporate entities that we deal with on a daily basis have some kind of similar incentive system that really makes for a poor customer service experience. And if you're leaving, they don't really care, I guess. So they just don't make it easy. But this is like what I just said to the nth degree, right?
Oh my God.
It's so crazy. You really have to go listen to at least a chunk of it if you haven't already.
Yeah. Or just read the summary if you don't want to be upset as I was by this experience.
Yeah, and I saw Ryan Block post on Twitter that he doesn't want the guy to get fired. He just wants Comcast to fix its process.
So it sounds like Comcast is taking that request pretty seriously.
Yeah, I would hope so, after this PR disaster for them.
I do not expect immediate and sweeping changes from Comcast.
No, definitely not immediate. That's for sure. So I don't know. We'll see if they do anything about it. But for now, it's this thing has just exploded everywhere because everybody can relate to this in a way, because we've all had some customer service experience where things are ridiculous in some way. And this is just that inflated a couple times. So everybody can relate to this kind of thing. All right. Well, I think it's time that we'll do it for the week. I think it's time for us to get out of here. So, Taylor, I know there's a bunch of ways to contact both of us. Well, what is the best way to contact you?
Well, when I plugged my new food-based Twitter last week, that's Taylor Food with a PHTAYLORPHOOD, I got some new followers. So I'm going to go ahead and plug it again this week.
Okay. All right. So if you wanted to get
at me... if you're going to talk to me about tech stuff, definitely do it on my other Twitter account, Taylor Phone, TAYLORPHONE.
Yeah, really, you should follow them both.
Well, I'm not going to talk about the Easter eggs again.
All right, and if you wanted to follow me on Twitter, I am at Chris Hailbarn. So give us a follow. Let us know what you think of the show or maybe what you think of Overcast, since we mentioned that. I think that'll do it. Let's get out of here. So thank you, everyone, for listening to the show. And, of course, you can find more information, including the show notes, over there at thedigitalmediazone.com under the end user. That's THENDUSR. The DMZ has a few other podcasts. You should listen to Entertainment 2.0. I'm sure they'll have more news about the Xbox than we talked about. And Richard Gunther's Home On, all about home automation. You can send us some feedback. We've got our email, theenduser@thedigitalmediazone.com, or you can follow us on Twitter. We are at @theenduser. Join us in the chat room as we record the show live every Monday night at 9 p.m. Eastern Time. I'm your host and producer, Chris Barnes.
And I'm Futurist Prime, Taylor Marr.
So thanks for listening, folks. We will see you next week. Bye-bye.